I mean, like, yeah, Rex went to an AFC title with the Jets 10 years ago, but like, is it just his personality? He's like an alpha male.
No, they love him. The players love him. It's insane. Like, he can do no wrong. And it's partly because he came in here and fans were eaten out of his hand. And, they got a season ticket waiting list for the first time. And,
He
fans were
just seems
going
like one of
nuts.
those guys that's really good at just telling people what they want to hear, man.
Yeah, I'm telling you, him and Jeff Fisher, and they should teach the master course and being shitty at your job and staying hired.
Come on, big fella, you drunk, big fella. Two sips and now you want a trip, big fella. You not a drinker. I can see it all in your leg, big fella. You wobbly, big fella. You finna fall. Sit down, you drunk, big fella.
All right, welcome back to episode 27 now of Keep Chopping Wood. Please keep rating and reviewing us on iTunes. I know you guys probably get sick of hearing me say this at the beginning of every show, but it really does help with the outreach of the show. The show, like I said last week, I can't believe that this many of you guys actually listened to us BS about this awful team. But thank you for doing it. Keep leaving us reviews and subscribing, sharing on Twitter, things of that nature. It really, really helps. And please keep sending your questions into the Keep Chopping Wood handle. We've had a ton of questions pouring in. We only got to a couple because last week's episode ran kind of long, but we're going to keep doing that that segment at the end of every show. This show too, we'll rehash the Lions game a little bit. I mean, it's the same team we've been watching for 2 months pretty much anyways, but to preview the Bills game and to do some draft stuff with us this week, we have Matthew Fairburn on. Matthew actually got started writing for Big Cat Country and working for Mocking the Draft on SB Nation, and he's been covering the Bills for the past 3 years. For what newspaper is it again that you're writing for, Matt?
It is the Syracuse Post Standard, but the website. I'm mostly on the website, and I'm based out here in Buffalo full time.
Yeah, that's awesome. So awesome to see like somebody that was in the Big Cat Country and SB Nation family like keep on climbing up and making your way up through the ranks in the sports media world, man. That's really cool.
Yeah, it was good. Dan Kadar over at SB Nation, for those of you guys who know him, I owe a tremendous amount to him. He kind of just gave me a shot basically for no reason to work for Mocking the Draft. And I took every one thing led to another, it's just like the NFL. You start stacking wins on top of wins and stacking good plays on top of good plays and things started working out. But it's a fun gig out here in Buffalo.
So Matt, if you don't mind me asking, just real quick. So you were doing Big Cat Country for a little bit, and then Dan Kadar just reached out to you. Was the draft something you were wanting to write about, or how'd that work?
It was actually Dan Kadar first. I was doing Mocking the Draft first, and then Big Cat Country. I went to Mizzou to do journalism, and I had started a website of my own just to, write about the draft, fantasy football, kind of whatever football thoughts I had. And I just kind of started emailing everybody at SB Nation. And it was like months later that finally, Dan, my email got in the hands of Dan, and he sent me an email and got me started. And then from there, I kind of just like, I would volunteer. I paid my own way to go to the combine, and they got me a credential. Paid my own way to get out to the draft 1 year. They got me a credential, and then I was covering Mizzou football, and then that's kind of how things started. Started to snowball a little bit.
Yeah, that's awesome, and you're actually like a perfect guest for this week because you get to cover like pretty much everything that's going on in Jaguar land right now, and you used to work writing and covering for the team, so you're very intimately familiar with with the Jacksonville Jaguars already. You're covering the Bills right now, which is their upcoming opponent, and you used to do the draft. And as you know, with as it goes with covering the Jags, by the time November hits, it's like already draft season. So
yeah, I think pronounced that's how October. I got that. You know, I think that's how I got that draft sickness, if you will. It was like growing up a Jaguars fan. It was every November, December. It was like, all right, what do I have to look forward to here? Because the product on the field became tough to watch sometimes, especially in those Blaine Gabbert years. But I think I blame the Jaguars for my draft sickness.
Yeah, it's actually kind of like a joke in draft Twitter that it seems like most of the people that tend to make up draft Twitter, it tends to be fans of perennially terrible franchises. Because yeah, like you said, that's really all there is to look forward to after week 8. I mean, we were talking about it a little bit before the show. Is it better to be like awful for 10 years, like how the Jaguars have been pretty much, or like it perennially, how many seasons did you say that it's been since Buffalo has made the playoffs?
The Bills are on 16 straight. And if they miss it this year, there'll be 17 straight years with no playoffs.
17 straight years with no playoffs, but like you said, there really hasn't ever been like they've been in like purgatory area, like 7-9, 8-8, 9-7. They've really never had that that year, it seems, that sticks out in my mind where they just completely bottomed out and were like a bottom 2 or 3 team in the NFL.
Yeah, they've had like a couple of bad years. You know, the year that they got Marcell Dareus, I think they were like, you know, 4-12 or 5-11 or something like that, but I saw a stat this weekend. The Bills won to get to 5-5, and in 15 seasons of the playoff drought, they've been 4-6 or 5-5 through 10 games. So this is like every November and December, it's the same exact thing there. You know, you see the in the hunt graphic, you're going to see the Bills logo, and then they're going to find a way to screw it up. They've had some epic screw ups at the end of the year to miss the playoffs, but they're always kind of just hovering on the edge of that in the hunt and kind of flirting with the playoffs, but they just have not been able to get it done. It's wild. It's the longest, after the Blue Jays made the playoffs a couple years ago, it's the longest streak in pro sports without the playoffs.
Oh, that's crazy, man. And well, they're right in that range again this year. They're pretty much getting a freebie game with the Jaguars. I mean, just recapping the Lions game, Jeff Risden, our guest last week, tweeted this out after the game, and it pretty much it says everything that you need to say. The Lions ran for 14 yards. They did not get a sack. They turned the ball over twice. They missed an extra point, and they still beat the Jaguars. And they covered against the spread, too. So a 6.5-point spread. So that pretty much sums up the Jaguars just find new and interesting way to lose this season, I guess. So the Bills, I mean, this is year 2 under Rex Ryan now. Do you anticipate Shady McCoy playing this week? And he's probably the most important player on either side of the ball in this game. Would you agree?
Yeah, it looks like he's going to play, and that's obviously good news for the Bills. I mean, if you look at, you know, the games they've lost, a lot of it has to do with, you know, against the Dolphins, LeSean McCoy got hurt. He missed the Patriots game. So when he's in the lineup, they're a completely different offense. Even in the second half against the Bengals, they were pretty much useless on offense after he went out. But he had surgery on Sunday night, and it sounds like he's going to be able to play. He might be a little bit limited, but they probably should be getting Mike Gillisley more touches anyways. And the offensive line's been fine, so it's definitely a different offense with McCoy in there, and it looks like he's going to be healthy, and I would agree he's probably the most important player on either side of the ball because, I mean, Marcell Dareus is finally back for the Bills. He's, you know, somewhat important to their defense, but the offense with McCoy is just a completely different animal than it is without him at this point.
Yeah, I was thinking about it before we even went on or anything, and he's probably the best offensive player that Rex Ryan has ever had in his career. I was trying to think of anybody else. I mean, DeBrickshaw, Ferguson, and Nick Mangold were obviously really good offensive linemen. But in terms of, like, skill position on offense or anything, I mean, he had, like, an aging LaDainian Tomlinson, Sean Green, Thomas Jones at the end, too. Santonio Holmes for, like, a year before his foot fell off. So he has an elite player for like I said, for the first time in his coaching career, really. And didn't even really have him healthy last year, but you can tell that he's definitely riding and getting everything out of McCoy that he possibly can.
Yeah, I mean, they gave up a lot to get him. You know, they not necessarily, you know, giving up Kiko Alonso wasn't that big of a deal, but they paid him quite a bit of money. And with running backs, it's so hard to tell how long they'll be in that prime. And I think that's why they're just pounding him until, you know, so that they can get everything out of him while they still can, because who knows when he'll fall off the cliff. I think he's different than most running backs because the way he plays, he's not taking the big hits that, you know, a lot of other running backs take because of his running style. But it's an interesting point. He might be Rex Ryan's best offensive player that he's ever had. And you could probably make a case that Sammy Watkins is the second most talented offensive player Rex Ryan's ever had, but he hasn't had him, you know, basically at all this season.
Yeah, it's been the Bills I actually really liked as a frisky team coming into the season, and then it was just hit after hit after hit after hit, and you know, in the weeks leading up to the season and early in the season, in terms of guys that they were going to be missing because of, you know, injury or suspension or whatever else, they kind of weathered the storm through the first couple of months and are starting to get guys back. Like you brought up Marcel Darius. Has Shaq Lawson, he started practicing, right? Has he been active for any games yet?
Yeah, Shaq Lawson came off PUP right on schedule, basically. And they've been, it's funny, he hasn't played like a humongous role because all of a sudden Lorenzo Alexander is one of the league leaders in sacks at age, you know, 33 or whatever he is. I mean, they signed him to be a special teams guy over the summer, and then he ends up, you know, he has 10 sacks this year. He had 9, I think, coming into the year in his whole career. And he beat out Manny Lawson. They end up cutting Manny Lawson. And so Shaq Lawson's had some trouble getting onto the field because of that. But he's been playing basically since he played in the Dolphins game, I believe, and he's been playing ever since then. So since week 7. And he's been rotating in. He's making an impact. And now, you know, they kind of have all their pieces coming back, at least on defense, and they can actually play defense the way Rex Ryan envisioned at the beginning of the year. The only guy they're really still missing on defense is Aaron Williams, who might not play again because of the neck injury, and they're still missing Sammy Watkins. They lost Eric Wood to a broken leg, the center, a couple weeks ago, but they're probably healthier at this point than they've been pretty much at any point this year, which obviously is a huge help to them. But then they lost Robert Woods last week, and so the offense could be a little bit shorthanded. That's what makes it so tough to kind of judge Tyrod Taylor, because he's thrown to Justin Hunter and Walt Powell and Brandon Tate, so he doesn't exactly have a big arsenal of weapons.
Yeah, go ahead. I can hear you.
Yeah, no, I was just going to ask about, well, first I was going to say, I can't believe you guys forgot about Rex Ryan's greatest skill player, Chris Ivory. But I was going to ask about Tyrod because, I mean, I readily admit I haven't watched a ton of Bills games this year, but something I've noticed when, like, looking at highlights and whatnot is that Tyrod, there's quite a few times where he's asked to just kind of tuck it and run. There's also times where, you know, it's obviously a designed pass play, but you can tell very quickly, like, he's going through his first, second read, and he just decides, nope, this is going to be me sort of escaping the pocket. So for Jaguars fans kind of watching that, like, we haven't played a ton of quarterbacks like that who can really, you know, run and beat them with their feet. So I'm wondering, like, do you think that's something that Rex is going to emphasize this game, you know, despite the fact that Paul Posluszny and Telvin Smith are actually playing pretty decent?
Yeah, you know, I think, well, first, I don't know if Rex Ryan will emphasize it because I don't know if he would know where the offensive meeting room is. you'd probably have to give him directions. But Anthony Lynn loves using Tyrod Taylor's running ability. They've done, you know, a lot of interesting things with the running game this year. Some unbalanced lines, some direct snaps to LeSean McCoy. And it's basically a part of the game plan every week to have Tyrod Taylor use his legs. And it's what makes makes evaluating Tyrod Taylor so interesting, because usually, you know, people are relying on these typical passing stats, the counting stats. Tyrod Taylor's never thrown for 300 yards in a game. I think he's at five or six games this year where he hasn't even hit 200. And so he rarely is piling up those passing yards. And it doesn't help that, like I said, he's not working with the best receivers right now. So they kind of have to use those creative ways to get him involved. I think it helps out LeSean McCoy a ton, helps out Mike Gillisley, helps out everybody in the running game because he's such a threat. And like you said, even if it's a design passing play, he'll get out in space and make you pay. I think probably what you should watch for with Tyrod Taylor the most, I would have to make an argument that there isn't a quarterback in the league who's as good at avoiding sacks as Tyrod Taylor, in terms of maybe not in the standard, you know, Tom Brady moving around the pocket and subtly avoiding sacks, but Tyrod Taylor, there will probably be a time on Sunday, maybe two or three times, where somebody has him dead to rights in the pocket and he finds a way to escape. He does it almost every Sunday. He's slippery in the pocket, and obviously he's really, really fast, probably the fastest quarterback in the league. So there seems to always be times when he's completely dead in the pocket, finds a way to wiggle free, and turns it into an 8-yard gain. And I have to imagine it's extremely frustrating for opposing defenses.
Yeah, and Tyrod's a guy that's really, really interesting to me. He's like, and I think it was shown really, really well, and I'm happy that he was able to finally have like a big performance on a national stage in that. I think it was a Monday night football game a couple weeks ago against Seattle. Was it Monday night or Sunday night?
That was Monday night.
It was Monday night, yeah. And he had a great showing, and it kind of showed too. He's kind of like a discount version of Russell Wilson, like 75 to 80% of what Russ is. Like, Russ is obviously special, but in terms, like Tyrod, in terms of being able to make the big play and have your offense be functional enough in the passing game, even with super crappy receivers, and then just what he does in the run game and in terms of compensating against the pass rush. Like, I think there's a lot of comparisons there. And when you really go through it and look at the list of quarterbacks in the AFC, like, or even in the entire NFL, it's not a stretch of anything to say that he's a top 10 guy, or like even like a top 6 or top 5 guy maybe in the entire AFC, you know, or a top 10 guy in the NFL.
Yeah, it's so interesting because, you know, they signed him to that contract before the season, which was essentially a 1-year raise, and then they have the option in the spring to you know, give him a huge raise, which would give him $27.5 million guaranteed in 2017. So all year he's been under the microscope in a big way, because, you know, every game's an evaluation at this point, and you have to decide, is this guy worth $27.5 million guaranteed? You know, are we willing to marry ourselves to this guy? Because right now he's pretty cheap, and he doesn't turn the ball over. He gives you a lot in the running game, but he leaves plenty to be desired, you know, as a passer at times. And, you know, I think a lot of people in Buffalo, you know, have grown a little bit impatient. I think the evaluation has gotten, you know, sped up because everybody knows in the spring there's a huge financial decision to make. But his cap hit would still be somewhere in the 18-20 range among quarterbacks. And I think even if
that's,
you ask
still
the
super
most
manageable, yeah,
exactly. If you ask the most pessimistic person about Tyrod Taylor, and I'm probably among them, I consider him right there in the middle between 15 and 20. Even then, the big thing is, like you said, I mean, who are you going to replace him with? Look at the other quarterbacks around the league. I mean, you know, you look at what the Jaguars are going through with Blake Bortles, you know, what some of these other teams are kind of fighting through at the quarterback position. Tyrod Taylor doesn't look that bad. You can build an offense around a guy like that, and the Bills have, you know, around the running game. And, you know, you build the defense up and hope that you don't turn the ball over. And I really think this offense would look so much different with Sammy Watkins, because he's one of the best deep ball receivers in the conference, and Tyrod Taylor throws a great deep ball. So it sucks for Tyrod Taylor that, you know, the $27.5 million decision the Bills have to make in the spring is going to come down to an evaluation that is going to be made largely without Watkins in the lineup. It's not ideal for him, but it's made it a very interesting conversation. It's very interesting to hear you guys talk about him, because around Buffalo, people are kind of writing him off a little bit just because, you know, because of that price tag that's coming up. But he's still a guy that, you know, could be pretty cost effective given what you get out of him.
Yeah, well, if you were to tell me that that Buffalo was not going to pick up that option on that contract and he was going to go and be a free agent, like, I would absolutely be all over that for the Jacksonville Jaguars.
Oh, yeah.
And I think he would get the money too. That's the thing. I think somebody would pay him. And and who else would be out there? If you let Tyrod Taylor walk, you know, the Bills will be, I mean, EJ Manuel's contract is up, so you're not turning to him. Cardale Jones, I mean, that would be interesting, but I'm not sure the Bills would be ready to hand the keys over to Cardale Jones just yet.
Right.
Then you're talking about entering the Tony Romo sweepstakes or going
Romo's
after Jake Cutler.
He's going to be controlling where he wants to go, too.
And he's not going to want to go to Buffalo. No. So, like you said, I think a team would pounce on Tyrod Taylor. I think what he's shown, he'd be one of the better free agent quarterbacks on the market.
Yeah, and the salary that you said that if they pick up his option, he'd be between like the 15th and the 20th in terms of salary or in terms of cap hit.
In terms of cap hit, I think he'd be right around, like, I think it's 18 or 20. The guaranteed money is quite a bit, but I don't think the Bills owners should really care about that. I'm pretty sure the cap hit will put him like between 18 and 20. It depends how things shake out with Kirk Cousins and all that, but it won't be top 10 money, that's for sure.
Yeah, that's super, super reasonable in my opinion. I mean, especially compared to like to what Flacco got or what Dalton. I mean, I know Dalton's is more like pay as you go, but still, when you have a quarterback on a manageable salary like that, it just allows so much more flexibility in what you can do with your roster. So that's an interesting dilemma that they're in. And you brought up not having Sammy he played like what, two games this year, I think.
Yeah, he played against the Ravens, and then he sort of half played against the Jets in week two, but he was still hurting with that foot. So he's played like a game and a half, essentially. He's been on IR, and he still hasn't practiced. So he's eligible to play against the Jaguars, but it's a big mystery over whether he will.
Right. Well, and they were super productive as a tandem down the stretch last season, though, right? Because I remember the fantasy guys were all really, really high on Sammy because I think he was like the most productive wide receiver over the last 6 weeks or something like that.
Yeah, they were on fire at the end of the season. And it was basically once they both got healthy, because Tyrod got hurt a little bit last year, missed a couple games with a knee injury. Sammy had, you know, a bunch of different injuries that he was dealing with. And once they finally, you know, were both healthy at the same time, they were lighting it up at the end of the year. It was, you know, they dominated the Chiefs, the Jets. Sammy destroyed Revis in one game. And it sucks for Tyrod that, you know, he doesn't get to play with Watkins. This offense in general has had to rely on Robert Woods as their number one wide receiver. He's a fine player, but he's not a number one by any stretch of the imagination. So that's what has made LeSean McCoy even more important for this team, because without Watkins, it's like they really have nowhere to turn. And Tyrod Taylor's not the type of quarterback that's going to make
just put
a
the
superstar,
team on his back. Yeah.
Right? He's not making superstars out of Justin Hunter and Brandon Tate. I don't know if there's a quarterback out there that can do that, and it's certainly not Tyrod.
Yeah, so I guess one more Bills really specific thing, and then we'll start jumping into Jag stuff and the draft and things of that nature. With all the guys, they've been starting to get back on defense. I mean, really, if your defense has any sort of semblance on a pulse, you can pretty much put it down in the books for two turnovers, maybe one of them for a score, and then a big special teams play, and that's pretty much all that you need to beat the Jaguars. So have you seen, has there been improvement on defense as Rex has gotten those guys back, and do you think that it's pretty much going to be a futile effort for the Jaguars offense against a Bills defense that is starting to get everybody back and get everybody healthy?
It's interesting because the Bills up until Sunday were really struggling defending the deep ball. Going into the Bengals game, they had allowed a pass of 50 yards or more in four straight, and they had allowed a pass of 25 or more in every single game. They were one of the worst teams in the league at defending the deep ball, which is really strange because coming into the year, Stephon Gilmore and Ronald Darby were supposed to be one of the best cornerback tandems in the AFC, and both of them have been pretty bad this year. But they started, causing some turnovers against Dalton and the Bengals once A.J. Green went out. And it strikes me that, the Jaguars are the perfect opponent for them to kind of rebuild their confidence as a secondary.
I love hearing that every week, Matthew, by the way. I really love hearing that every week on Keep Chopping Wood.
It's funny because, talking to Rex on Monday, I was actually laughing in the media room while he's giving his press conference because he's sitting there talking about the Jaguars and he's like, oh yeah, this is the best 2-win team I've ever seen. And I actually laughed out loud and cause he was going on and he's like, they have a franchise quarterback. At least that's what they all tell me. And he's saying, he goes, they had more top 100 players than we did, talking about the NFL top 100 or whatever. And he's just going through this whole, this whole spiel. He even brought up Chris Ivory. He's like, I know how good he is. I had him with the Jets. And it's like, I know for a fact, Rex is just talking out his ass basically. And then I asked him later in the press conference, about, I couldn't even come up with the right word for it. Cause what I wanted to say was, how do you change your preparation when you're going up against a quarterback who constantly throws it to the wrong team? And he was like, oh, well, he's had some bad luck. I'm like, I mean, so he's trying to heap praise on them, but Rex isn't very good about hiding his sarcasm. So,
right.
That's what Gus said. Didn't Gus use the word luck? Like he's had some bad luck. A lot of quarterbacks in the NFL have bad throws.
Yeah.
Right. Which I don't know. Obviously last year, Blake had a lot more good luck. I think luck is probably a part of it, but you might just call it kind of falling back to the mean a little bit. But it's interesting. I think this defense is going to have it could be one of those days where Bortles just kind of throws it up to Allen Robinson and Allen Hurns and Stephon Gilmore and Ronald Darby can't make plays on the ball. Ryan Fitzpatrick came in here in week two and it was embarrassing. He just dropped back and was throwing 50-50 balls every single time to Decker, Marshall, and Anunua, and they were catching everything because Gilmore and Darby couldn't make plays on the ball. Maybe Blake Bortles gets that kind of luck, but in order to get that kind of luck, he also has to put the ball somewhere in the vicinity of those receivers. So I think the Bills built up some confidence as a secondary last week, and if that carries over, this is the type of quarterback that won't be afraid to, throw a couple to the wrong team.
I mean, yeah, that's basically been the theme of the season pretty much. I know that you don't really get to watch them too much anymore because you're busy covering the Bills every Sunday, but pretty much, Brian, would you say that it's been the same story? I don't even feel like there's anything new to say about this team.
Yeah, I mean it follows almost the exact same storyline. This game was the Lions game was probably the closest to it. Kind of felt like the Ravens game a little bit, but all of them are very much glimmer of hope. But there's always in the back of your head we're just barely going to cover the spread, or they're going to run away with it.
Yeah. Do you? This is something that Hank brought up. I think it was during the game. I tweeted it out earlier today. But do you think there's anything to the theory, I guess, that they're just going to ride Blake for the rest of the season, pretty much because they're actually scared that the offense will look better under Chad Henne and what that will mean for pretty much everybody in the building for their future going forward?
Well, I mean, if you don't think about it like a football team, and if you were to think about it like any other sort of industry or job, then I think it would be very easy to say, well, the guy that we brought in and groomed and hired for this position is not working out. And this other guy who just, you know, is not our guy. He was brought in by someone else, or he wasn't the plan. And yet he would be better than this person that we spent all these resources to bring in. If you look at that in, you know, the context of, you know, a CEO of some Fortune 500 company or something like that, you could very easily draw conclusions and say, well, they're just kind of protecting their own asses. But because it's a football team, we look at it a little differently than we would any other job. And you have to imagine, I mean, obviously Gus Bradley's not going to be here for, you know, after this season. He's not going to be here in January. Dave Caldwell is kind of 50-50. You have to imagine that both of them are thinking very selfishly, like, right now. And if they kind of go out with, if they have to look for a job in January, knowing that the final few games of the season, their guy was bested by Chad Henne, then they're, you know, they're shit out of luck. But if Blake Bortles doesn't flame out until they've already, you know, signed a 3-year contract somewhere else, then good on them.
Yeah, and isn't that kind of how things happened with Blaine? I mean, like, once you realize Chad Henne was a much better option than the supposed franchise quarterback, it made Gene Smith look even worse than he made himself look. I mean, you don't gain – well, and then you have to ask the question – about everybody, right? If you're giving up on Blake Bortles, you give up on the guy who drafted him, and you give up on the guy who coached him. I mean, those three are always so tied together. I feel like too many teams go with, you know, by pointing the finger at one, or, you know, without going with that full-scale teardown, they end up screwing it up. And I always wonder, you know, and it happens with the Bills all the time, is like, imagine if guys coached or, you know, ran the front office or any of that without worrying about their job security, how that would go. Because so many stupid decisions are made because of job security and trying to work the politics of the NFL, and it screws everything up. It's why the Bills gave up way too much draft capital to move up and get Sammy Watkins, because Doug Whaley didn't know about ownership and made a desperate move to try to make the 2014 team a bit more talented and make EJ Manuel look better than he was. I mean, you could go on and on. You could probably find it with every team in the league other than the guys who are really comfortable in their jobs, like Bill Belichick. But so many guys are just making politics moves, and it screws up so many franchises.
Well, and to your point with Blaine Gabbert and Gene Smith, I think that's a really good point, because correct me if I'm wrong, Eric, but Blaine Gabbert was hurt some of 2012, and Chad Henne had to step in, correct? And 2013. Yeah. And so like Gene Smith, I mean, he has some like personal stuff going on, or at least that's what I hear. But like, Gene Smith has not worked in the NFL since being fired by the Jaguars. And so like, I think that's kind of partly what's motivating Dave Caldwell and Gus Bradley, especially Dave Caldwell, is, man, if Chad Henne goes in there and he doesn't lose games, like, I could, I'm blackballed, you know?
Yeah, well, because at this point, you can just blame it on, you can say, I had shit to deal with, like, I didn't have shit when I got here, and
right,
I got good shit, but this coach isn't turning it into that. Like, I got good shit, but, like, it's not being used, and there's no flowers being sprung from it, you know what I mean?
Yeah, and Gus can always say, well, you know, I was handed Blake Bortles, and you saw Blake Bortles, and so they can both sort of blame the other to, you know, have a few more years in the NFL.
Yeah, it's I don't know. And like what Matt said too, so many decisions are made with job security in mind. Like that's a saying that I've had for a long, long time is like, what's a good move for your GM and his job security is not always and is usually like the opposite of like what's good for your franchise. You know what I mean? Especially when once you get into these moments of crisis, like the Jacksonville Jaguars are not even beginning to enter like what they've been in a tailspin all year, man. Really, this should have we should have had resolution to this entire situation last year, in my opinion.
Should have.
Yeah, would have been tricky if because you probably still wouldn't have known about Blake, and then Blake right. would have screwed up another coaching staff, and unless you know there's a belief that he could have been better. With a different coaching staff, but you might be able to, I mean, maybe the best thing that happens is if he does, you know, get hurt, even if it is for a half, and you can see how different it looks with Chad Henne, because I just think like, imagine if Allen Robinson, Allen Hurns and Marquise Lee were running around in Bills uniforms on Sunday. I think Tyrod Taylor would probably look quite a bit better. Than Blake Bortles. He probably is going to look better than Blake Bortles anyways, but he'd probably look a lot better than he normally does, and he'd certainly look a lot better than Blake Bortles does with those guys. So, and I don't know, like you said, when Blaine got hurt, it kind of exposed, you know, him for who he was, for who everybody thought he was, and maybe if that happens to Bortles, that would be the only chance you'd have to see what the offense looks like with a competent quarterback back there.
Yeah, and I mean he jacked up his shoulder against Detroit, but apparently he's was he a full participant in practice today or limited? I don't know. They pretty much said they're gonna run him out there until he right. basically can't throw the ball anymore.
Yeah.
So and that's one thing I will give him credit for is he's a tough son of a bitch, man.
Like, yeah, he's only missed that one snap, the one yeah. that Chad Henne took, like since he was named the starter in 2014. That's the only snap he's missed.
Yep, and he creates a lot of his own sacks, but he's also pretty good at it. He's a pretty good player at avoiding pressure and improvising and things of that nature too. So
he's done really good about not creating his own sacks this year, though.
Much like, improved, yeah.
Yeah, it really like I do that thing every week where like I took it over from Hank who got too busy at UCF, but it's been eye-opening just how good he's gotten in that area. Now, obviously, he's regressed in just about
pretty
every
much
other
everything
area.
Else. Yeah,
yeah, but he's giving up less sacks, so you know that's something.
Yeah, I think Tony actually Baselli talked about that on the Monday show that this was their first game in like I think since he started where they did not give up a sack.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Which is ironic because he ended up getting hit and got hurt anyways. But
well, that's because he wasn't looking where he was going, and he like yeah. just was kind of running a little wildly. And I think it was Ezekiel Ansah who was like who chased him down.
All right, so Matt, I guess we're gonna transition into draft stuff now. You think that's good, Ryan?
Yeah, let's go for it.
All right. We talked about Jabril Peppers with Jeff Risden last week. He talked about Myles Garrett a little bit. But the Jaguars, I mean, they're probably going to be picking somewhere between 3 and 5, I would assume. So probably edge rusher. I mean, I know that you used to cover the team, but you don't anymore. So I don't know how super familiar you are with their depth chart and where they stand at every position right now. But it seems to be that defensive front seven. It seems to be a pretty good class for that. That seems to be like the vibe that I've been getting from people on draft Twitter so far.
Yeah, it's interesting because we're sitting here, you know, like you mentioned, not much has changed with the Jaguars, and I've kind of been, you know, watching from the outside for the last 3 years, basically.
Mm-hmm.
And you guys are bringing up Chad Henne, and I'm still realizing that that's a thing. You know, that hasn't changed since I left. And, nope. Oh, they still need an edge rusher.
Yep.
we've only known that for, what, 15 years? I mean, you know, they've been looking for an edge rusher since I was in, like, fourth grade. So, you know, I think it's still the way to go. I don't think Dante Fowler is anything special from what you guys have said and from the little bit that I've seen. other than that, I mean, they haven't exactly brought anybody in, and that's why you almost have to hope that Dave Caldwell is not the guy making the pick. I mean, they passed on Ziggy Ansah a few years ago for Luke Jokel. They've passed on some good players at that position. They passed on Vic Beasley. And if you're counting on Dave Caldwell to knock a top five pick out of the park on an edge rusher, I don't think he's going to be the guy that will do it. Unless Myles Garrett falls into his lap. I mean, because Myles Garrett looks like a pretty easy pick for anybody to make, but who knows if the Jaguars will be bad enough to get him, or if, you know, maybe a couple quarterbacks go and he falls. But if that doesn't happen, then you definitely risk Caldwell screwing it up for, you know, basically every pick he's made other than Jalen Ramsey.
Yeah, if he's still around, I have this weird feeling that he's going to end up picking Leonard Fournette, because he's not going to give up on his quarterback. He's going to say that the edge position is okay because Ngakoue has been pretty good as a rookie, and he's going to say, you know, we still have Fowler. And was just not being used right, and he's going to make up some bullshit. So there's really, like, nowhere else for him to double down without admitting that, like, he had previously fucked something else up. You know what I mean?
Yeah, when you're GM for this long, there's only so many places you can hide. You know, I mean, at this point, it's like, it would be interesting if he took Leonard Fournette because, you know, I don't know. They've invested some capital in that position, but it seems like the way he's built the team is on that philosophy of, like, you know, we can plug in second round picks or, you know, free agents at running back and everything will be fine. But, you know, especially given the fact that they've, you know, put a ton of wide receivers around Blake Bortles and all that. But at this point, that's one of the only spots they can go. And I wouldn't be surprised if teams, you know, overpick these running backs just because they see what Ezekiel Elliott's doing for the Dallas Cowboys right now.
Exactly.
So that's helping out Leonard Fournette and Dalvin Cook in a big way, even though both those guys, you know, have some injury red flags. I think there's a good chance that, you know, we're going to go back to the, and I've wondered too, especially, you know, covering the Bills, it's like, I wonder if we're going back. You know, kind of the pendulum is swinging the other way. And because there are so many bad quarterbacks, the teams are going to try to turn themselves into running teams and kind of counteract that movement with defenses getting smaller. If you can get a back like Cook or Fournette and, you know, ride them on their rookie contract until their wheels fall off, it might not be the worst way to go.
No, yeah, I totally agree with that. And I see the pendulum starting to swing that way, too. You mentioned it with the defenses getting lighter. I think the so many bad quarterbacks is a huge issue. And I know we've seen pass attempts go up and up and up and up every year, but the yards per attempt number is holding pretty steady. So really all you're doing is just you're increasing a bunch of attempts for a mediocre or subpar player. And, you know, the player that probably has, like, the biggest impact on the game, do you really want to give a mediocre or subpar player more touches like that, or try to, you know, minimize his impact on the game as much as possible and hide him with a good running game? I mean, that seems to be the only thing that I think that could get in the way of that is that offensive lines aren't very good right now either, which is the other big issue. I mean, like, we can point to the success that Ezekiel has had, but that Dallas invested a lot of capital for a long time and went under the radar doing it for a long time, building that offensive lineup, and it's starting to pay off huge for them.
Yeah, and that's the same thing Buffalo's done. Their offensive line isn't quite as good as Dallas, but they have enough, you know, veteran pieces that are, you know, quality players that they could plug in LeSean McCoy and build the offense that way. But, you know, you're right. It's like pass attempts go through the roof. And, you know, everybody in Buffalo complains that, you know, Tyrod Taylor hasn't thrown for 300 yards or, you know, he doesn't have those traditional passing numbers. But it's like, you know, there's plenty of, I watched with my own eyes Blaine Gabbert throw for 300 yards at Lambeau Field. I think I'd rather have any game Tyrod Taylor's ever played than the game, you know,
yeah.
Most games Blaine Gabbert played. So it's like all
these
pass
attempts.
That was
the best game that he ever played.
Right. I mean, and all these pass attempts do is just inflate those counting stats. They don't exactly make, you know, your passing offense more efficient. Tyrod Taylor can hit a couple big plays. The Bills are turning the ball over at a historically low rate. You know, maybe we have a little bit of a throwback to, you know, the days where some of those guys can take you deep into the playoffs. Because once guys like Tom Brady leave, you know, I don't see guys
ready
to step up and take over the reins. Andrew Luck was supposed to be, you know, the leader of that next era of quarterbacks, and he's just a guy at this point. So I don't know. It's like, why not try build it a different way? But, you know, I haven't studied this running back class enough to know how deep it gets and whether that's the wisest use of capital at the top of the draft. But you're right. If Caldwell's still there, that pick, Leonard Fournette, would make almost too much sense for him.
Yeah, I think that's exactly what it's going to be. We were thinking about maybe going through all of Dave Caldwell's drafts and what he's done so far and whether it's worth extending him or not. We might have to do that. I mean, I know we did it a little bit with Alfie a couple weeks ago, but Alfie wrote a piece on Big Cat Country about, you know, should Dave Caldwell be on the hot seat? I think it's a really, really interesting issue for this team because you can't just blame everything on coaching for them. So I suggest everybody go check that out. Alfie kind of looks at, like, and grades how each one of his picks and free agent acquisitions has gone. And it's not a very good record. I mean, there's 4 years of 4 years of evidence on this. And I mean, other than Jalen Ramsey kind of falling into his lap, his first round picks at the top of the draft have been bad. The entire 2013 class has bombed out. 2014 is kind of saving him right now. 2015 looks like it's bombing out as well. So, I mean, there's just not a whole lot for him to hang his hat on. And like Alfie brought up, it's not even so much like, are you going with Dave Caldwell for another year? You pretty much have to extend him, because if not, what kind of are you going with the lame GM situation?
Yeah, and correct me if I'm wrong, but he hired Gus Bradley, did he not?
He did. I mean, they came in together. So, I mean, some people say it was the owner's hire. Some people say it was the GM's hire. But they definitely came in together. And Caldwell was hired before Bradley.
Yeah, and that's another one of the, you know, we mentioned guys making moves for their job security and things like that. I mean, that's where when you're trying to figure out what's wrong with a football team, it's so hard to peel back the layers sometimes because, you know, you have to figure out who's making the football decisions ultimately. Like with the Bills, it's like, okay, it's not a player's issue. Is it a coach issue? Okay, well, who hired the coach? Because that's ultimately an issue as well, because hiring the coach is arguably the biggest football decision that you can make. And if Caldwell hired the wrong guy, why does he get to... I mean, you could argue that the two biggest issues with the Jaguars are the coach and the quarterback, and Caldwell has some responsibility in both of those moves. And so there should be a target on his back going into the offseason, because like you mentioned, what kind of coaching candidate are you going to get with a lame duck GM and a slappy quarterback? I mean, I don't think I'd go down there, and I mean, I'd probably go down there for the money, but like if I'm a good coaching candidate, I'm not going down there to coach that team, because you just see what's happened, you know, to the last handful of coaches that have gone down there, and it's turned out very poorly for them.
I think that's a really good point, Matt, about kind of saying what are the two biggest decisions Dave Caldwell's made, and, you know, they've been Blake Bortles and Gus Bradley. And I think we talk about Caldwell in terms of hiring Gus Bradley in terms of his drafts, but, I mean, if you look at his free agent classes too, like other than Roy Miller and like send Eric Marks up until this year, like name one free agent that's been a hit.
Yeah, and I mean, who has had... The other thing about Dave Caldwell is he can talk about how it was when he got there. And yes, he got a really bad roster, maybe one of the worst any GM has ever inherited. But
they made it worse, though.
And they also, not for nothing, but Dave Caldwell probably had more to work with as a general manager than like anybody. It was like an expansion team. And he he's gotten what, a top five pick in every, or every a top draft. 10 pick in every year. And four he was what, years. Seven last year or something. I mean, he's had so many great draft picks. He's had a ton of salary cap space to make whatever moves, you know, he wants to make to add talent to the roster. I mean, he's had, it's hard to, you know, sit there and say, well, you know, he's done okay. Like, you know, give him more time and see how this all shakes out. How much time does a guy get? I mean, rarely does a team get, you know, or coach GM combo get as much leeway as Gus Bradley and Dave Caldwell have gotten. I mean, by game 10 of, you know, the Rex Ryan era, people were calling for his head in Buffalo. Like,
dude, and it's so crazy, man. It's crazy.
Like, Shad Khan has just given Gus Bradley and Dave Caldwell, you know, as much freedom as anybody can give their head coach and GM, and as much job security. It's insane.
They're going to get to 50 losses as a regime, those two.
Which is unbelievable. And, you know, I think, so you could argue that Gus Bradley will, his, you know, statistically go down as the worst football coach in NFL history.
Yep.
He's going to be, his name will be there. And, you know, we've had a lot of, this is a good year for historically inept coaches, because Bradley's going to hit a crazy number of losses in 4 years. Jeff Fisher is second all time in losses now, which is awesome. And Rex Ryan, if he misses the playoffs, will become the fourth coach since the merger to miss the playoffs six straight calendar years, which would also be an awesome feat.
Wow.
In ineptitude. So this could be a great year for bad coaches, and I'm pretty excited about it.
Yeah, I'm actually kind of rooting for all that stuff to happen, to be honest, now that you bring all that up.
Like, how does a coach miss the playoffs six straight years and stay employed? That's very, very impressive, because usually what will happen is a guy will miss like three, four in a row, get fired, take a year off, come back, maybe miss a couple more. But Rex didn't even take a year off. He was like, I'm going to get right back in there and miss the playoffs again. And I respect him for it.
Oh, man. Ryan, do we have what questions do we have?
Yeah. So the first question is talking about quarterbacks. Are there any potential franchise guys? This would be more for you, Matthew. We've talked about this on a couple of episodes, but are there any potential franchise guys in this draft? Is there anyone who you would spend a top five pick on?
You know, I haven't dug deep enough to see past the first few guys. I think Deshaun Watson is a really solid quarterback prospect, and I know he's going to get nitpicked to death throughout the pre-draft process because he's not having a great year, and he will probably be hurt, you know, in the pre-draft process as a result. I could see one of these other quarterbacks sneaking up. Mitch Trubisky, is that how you say his name? The guy from what, North Carolina? Is that where he is? Yeah. I have not watched him. Like, some people are starting to, I can already see it. I like following the draft now from afar, because I usually get into it in the postseason, and I can kind of see, you know, guys falling for guys early. I think I would take Deshaun Watson in the top 10, but I don't know if Kaiser is going to declare. It sounds like he won't. And maybe there'll be another quarterback that sneaks up into the top, but I think to say there's not a potential franchise quarterback in a draft is a huge, huge mistake, in general. Even I know the 2013 draft was a complete mess at the quarterback position, but if you're saying there's nobody there with the potential, then you're probably not looking hard enough. You know, you look at Dak Prescott last year, there always seems to be a guy that if you look hard enough and put him in the right situation, he could have some success. But I can't say, you know, I've watched enough of Watson to say whether I'd pull the trigger that early. And I don't even know that the Jaguars are going to go down that road anyways.
Gotcha. Again, speaking of quarterbacks, this time going to veterans, because with a new head coach will likely come that head coach's or that coaching staff's veteran choice. And so someone wanted to know specifically, is Kirk Cousins any good?
I think Kirk Cousins,
yeah. There's no way that Washington's letting him leave anyways.
Yeah, he's not going anywhere. They can't afford to let him go. It's very similar to the Tyrod Taylor situation, except I think they kind of screwed themselves because they kept him on the franchise tag, and now they're going to have to pay him.
Yep.
And every time you look at a quarterback like that and think, oh, maybe they'll let him walk, they're not going to let him walk. It just doesn't happen. If he's gone out and earned the money, which I think he has to this point, they're probably going to pay him. It might be too much money, but that's the risk they took by putting him on the tag.
Gotcha. Someone wanted a lesson in masochism, and they asked for us to go through all the former coaches with the Jaguars, Tom Coughlin, Jack Del Rio, Mike Mularkey, and to talk about what our record this year would be. If each one of them, or kind of where we'd be this year, where we'd be looking if each one of them were head coach.
That's a good one. Coughlin would be like the best case scenario for this team, right? And I would say maybe like 6-10.
You think we'd end up 6-10 with Coughlin?
I think that sounds about right.
You might be able to get him to like 7-9, maybe.
I don't know. Coughlin was so damn good at winning, at like matching up against division teams. And I'm just imagining, like, if he can match up against like decent AFC Central teams, he would kick, you know, the AFC South shit in.
Maybe. I don't know, man. The question is how much do you think each one of these coaches fixes Blake Bortles?
Well, if that's the question, then Tom Coughlin might not be the best one. I mean, it might be Del Rio. I mean, Del Rio got a lot out of Garrard. He got a lot of mileage out of Garrard. But he had like a killer offensive line, and he had a pretty good run game.
Yeah, maybe Mike Mularkey wasn't so bad after all.
Yeah, I didn't want to bring him up, but he's made Mariota like pretty good.
Mm-hmm.
Well, Mariota's probably also, you know, baseline better than Bortles, but
God damn it,
he also built the offense in such a way that it didn't have to be on Mariota all the time.
Yeah, it's almost quarterback proof.
Right.
And that was kind of smart. He, I know, felt very, very hamstrung in Jacksonville. I think he regretted taking that job almost as soon as he did when he saw what he was dealing with. But not to say he wasn't a terrible coach in Jacksonville, but it's weird. He quit in Buffalo.
Yeah, because he didn't like Losman.
Right,
and he put himself in the exact same situation in Jacksonville.
It's bizarre, and it's funny because you never hear of a coach quitting, and the Bills have had two because Mularkey and Marone have
both came to Jacksonville.
And they both came to Jacksonville.
And they both came to Jacksonville, which is like, I don't know. I guess just that's
symbolic. I guess.
Yeah,
I don't want to go down that rabbit hole.
This is going to be a big one for Doug coming back to Buffalo for the first time.
Right, revenge narrative.
Yeah, we tried to request him for the conference call, but he politely declined.
Okay, so last question. I actually had about 8 or 9 questions, but y'all answered most of them during the pod. Last question. Bills are favored by 7 points so far. Are the Jaguars going to cover the spread?
I say no.
Yeah, I don't think so. I usually wait until the end of the week and see where all the money is and see what Vegas does with the line because Vegas usually knows better than I do. But the Bills have done okay when they're big favorites. It doesn't happen often, but they usually take care of business. Rex Ryan is pretty good in those situations. They took care of the 49ers earlier, and they're playing at home. I just think
Bradley on the road, man. It was like I said, the same situation last week. Like the Jags were covering three quarters of the way through that game, and
they were covering all but the last 30 seconds.
Yeah, exactly. So
the Lions did a miracle to cover. The only thing that like would make me hesitate is what happened last year in London, which is still one of the strangest things I've ever seen with my own eyes. Was
super weird loss, man.
That was a really, really weird game. And you know, I asked Rex on Monday, you know, how much that, you know, sticks with him and the team, you know, what Jaguars did to them in London. And he was like, was it what the Jaguars did or what the refs did? And I was like, well, so, but what I wanted to say was it was more of what EJ Manuel did than anything, because he threw like three picks right off the bat. But that was a really bizarre game, and pretty much everything that could have gone wrong for the Bills in that game went wrong, and the Jaguars still barely won. And the Jaguars are worse this year, so that's what makes me think that even if the Bills trip over themselves for a while, they can still win the game by two touchdowns.
I 100% agree with that take.
That's a pretty good note to end on.
Yeah, I think so. That kind of punctuates. How many more weeks do we have of this goddamn team, man?
Six, including Sunday.
Six, including Sunday. All right. Well, on that note, thank you, everybody, for listening. Vito was actually tweeting out some pretty interesting stuff on the Monday after the show. It seems like there's some other people that are just as masochistic as we are. He said they have 150,000, like, dedicated TV viewers pretty much every single week, and that's even after they've been bottoming out. So that's pretty impressive to me. Considering how small like the TV market actually is and how bad they are. So Jags fans are something else, man. As bad and as shitty as they are, you guys still eat this content up. So thank you for listening. Please keep subscribing and reviewing us on iTunes. Like I said, I know you guys get sick of me saying it at the beginning, at the end of these shows, but like it really, really helps. And for new listeners, please definitely do that. And keep tweeting at the Keep Chopping Wood handle with questions, suggestions, comments, anything else like that. Advertisers, you can also hit up the Keep Chopping Wood handle or keepchoppingwood@gmail.com. Matt Fairburn, thank you again for coming on. You were an awesome guest. Go ahead and tell everybody your Twitter handle and plug your work and do everything that you want to do before we go ahead and sign off here.
Yeah, you guys can find me on Twitter at Matthew Fairburn and read my stuff at Syracuse.com. That's about it. Appreciate you guys having me. It was good catching up with you guys. It's fun to be back in Jaguars Twitter, be an active participant for a week. I think that's about all I can handle at this point.
That seems to be about anything that anybody associated with this team can handle at that point. We've already had some diehards fall off the Twitter sphere this week. So rest in peace to Wiggle Man, and we will catch everybody next week.